It is Friday, January the 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us. Coming up, big New Year's Eve fire in Dubai under tight security.
There were hundreds of security present all day long in downtown Dubai, and hundreds of security in the mall itself and on the area on the esplanade near the fountains. And they really did move rapidly. About maybe 15 minutes after the fire really got raging, they started moving people indoors.
Also ahead, any progress on HIV treatment and prevention in 2015? Plus, a look at the world's extreme weather of late. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. New Year has been welcomed in many places with fireworks, displays, festivities all over the place. One of the largest was in Dubai, where hundreds of thousands of people witnessed not only fireworks at midnight, but a huge fire engulfing a high-rise luxury hotel near the Burj Khalifa. All residents had been evacuated from the 63-floor address hotel after it became consumed in fires late Thursday. One of the witnesses was VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir, who is spending the holiday in Dubai. She speaks here with International Edition's Jim Stevenson and describes where she was at the time the fire broke out.
I was having dinner tonight for the new year, just under the Burj Al Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world, and where they have the spectacular fireworks show planned. And we had dinner in a restaurant out on the terrace near the fountains. They have fountains like the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas, for instance. And then the address hotel where the fire broke out is about 1,000 meters maybe or a little bit more away from the Burj Al Khalifa, separated by one of the world's biggest shopping malls. And at about 9:30 local time, the fire started, and it spread very rapidly up the building.
That's what we have heard from other eyewitnesses, that this was an extremely fast-moving fire.
I couldn't believe how quickly we were. First, we just looked up from our table and said, oh, my goodness, there's a fire. And then all of a sudden, the whole building was engulfed. So it was really quite shocking to see. And there's smoke and fire still billowing from the buildings. And it's actually the smoke is blowing towards the Burj Al Khalifa now. But the whole north side of the address hotel, which is a very five-star luxury hotel where I'm sure many people were celebrating New Year's Eve because it has such a wonderful view of the fireworks show. Seeing it looked quite terrible, and you wondered how people were going to evacuate.
What was the immediate reaction where you were? Were officials on the scene quickly? Were they trying to move people out? Did people stay in place?
Yes. There were hundreds of security present all day long in downtown Dubai, and hundreds of security in the mall itself and on the area on the esplanade near the fountains, and they really did move rapidly. About maybe 15 minutes after the fire really got raging, they started moving people indoors because there was flaming debris falling off of the hotel. It wouldn't have hit where we were sitting, but it probably could have hit some of the people in restaurants that were a bit closer to the hotel. And the authorities, you know, made everybody move inside. The people were very orderly. I was afraid with so many thousands of people in the area, there could be some sort of a stampede situation, but the authorities seemed to have really managed the crowds quite well.
And a lot of people indeed were outside waiting for that spectacular fireworks display, perhaps the biggest and best in the world for New Year's, and that went ahead.
It did. They were going to have it in several places in the Emirate of Dubai as well as in the other Emirates of the United Arab Emirates. So, and Burj Al Arab is where midnight kickoff was to happen, and they still went ahead with it, and we actually were told to leave the restaurant at around 11:30, and so we proceeded out through parking garages and things to avoid the hotel, and we were in the street with thousands of other people, and they were cheering when the fireworks started. They were very happy that the show went on.
That is VOA's Margaret Bashir speaking from Dubai with my colleague Jim Stevenson. Staying on the Dubai fire now, International Edition social media reporter G. Abby Lee joins us with what's happening online with regard to all of this. Hi, G.
Hi, Steve. I've been following the CNN Breaking News Twitter account at CNNBRK, and one of their tweets reads like this. Dubai carries on with hashtag New Year's Eve fireworks as hotel fire rages. Online media giant Mashable also tweeted about it, attaching a CNN photo. The tweet reads like this. New Year's fireworks in Dubai where a fire engulfed a 63-story hotel today.
Gee, and what about the public's reaction on all of this?
Many people are commenting that the Dubai authorities' decision to continue with the fireworks is a surprise to them. These are some of the comments to the CNN tweet. A user named Andy Ango tweeted this. They're still hosting celebrations. Yeah, richest country on earth, which is not true, by the way, but that boasting is insensitive in light of this. Another comment was a more practical concern. A user with last name Lyons tweeted, what is happening to the hotel guests and residents? Are they just wandering the streets? Sure, it's hard to find a room.
Speaking of which, I was wondering about that too. Is the Dubai government tweeting about the safety of its hotel guests?
It is. The government of Dubai has a PR Twitter account at DXB Media Office, and it tweeted updates about both the accident and fireworks Thursday.
I see. So what did you find?
Quite a lot, actually. The account tweeted that the country's tourism department will provide the hotel guests with alternative accommodation. It also counted there were 14 minor injuries, one moderate and one heart attack case because of overcrowding and smoke at the fire site. Now, in addition to the written updates, it also shared several clips of the fireworks. That's all for me today. And Steve, I wish you and, of course, all of our listeners around the world a happy 2016.
And a happy 2016 to you as well. That is our social media guru, G. Abby Lee. You know, you can find her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and you can follow International Edition on Twitter at VOA _IE.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
U.S. Justice Department says authorities have arrested a New York State resident accused of planning to kill civilians on New Year's Eve in the name of the Islamic State. The statement said that 25-year-old Emmanuel Lutchman was charged with attempting to provide material support to the IS militants. News of the arrest followed reports from around the world that security precautions were tightened in many cities to protect New Year's celebrations. Chairman of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee has reportedly indicated his committee will look into media reports the Obama administration spied on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that involved private conversations with U.S. lawmakers. Republican Congressman Devin Nunes says he has asked the Director of National Intelligence and the head of the National Security Agency to brief lawmakers on this matter next week. It follows a story by the Wall Street Journal that despite a pledge from the President Obama 2 years ago to curtail eavesdropping on friendly heads of state, the White House decided to keep a close watch on Mr. Netanyahu. The paper, citing current and former U.S. officials, said the information gathered would help counter Israel's strong opposition to the international nuclear arms agreement with Iran. Middle East analyst Michael Fishbach of Randolph-Macon College tells my colleague Victor Beatty he does not believe the revelation will harm bilateral ties.
Everybody knows that the United States is entering into the election cycle for a new president, and I think that all eyes are looking toward other factors as far as what's going to determine U.S.-Israeli relations in the future. Number two, it's generally agreed that both President and Prime Minister Netanyahu have agreed to put the past unpleasantness behind them. And so I really don't think this is going to be a major breakthrough as far as changing the tenor of American-Israeli relations or the relations personally between the President and the Prime Minister. Now, what it does for the President's relationship with Congress, which is controlled by the opposition Republican Party, is another matter.
The White House, in a statement, said, "We do not conduct any foreign intelligence surveillance activities unless there is a specific and validated national security purpose." So they left some wiggle room there.
Well, I suppose the president's staff might be thinking, and who knows, perhaps there's some degree of truth, that in his conversations with congressional leaders, was the Israeli prime minister being given information, even unwittingly, by members of the American Congress information that was classified under American law and not supposed to be revealed to a foreign leader. Now, politically, that may not make a difference to the president's critics, but given the traditional American worry about disclosures of classified information, disclosures of methods, how American officials obtain the information that they do, there could be some in the administration who felt that they were worried that Congress might be, however unwittingly, passing along information to the Prime Minister of Israel, and that's why they ordered this kind of spying. I will also say that it is embarrassing, if proven true, for the president for another reason, and that is recently he agreed, or the government released the American spy who had been in prison for so many years, Jonathan Pollard, who was, of course, an American accused for spying for Israel. So if here's a case where the Americans were themselves spying on Israel, it could make the president look bad.
That is Randolph-Macon scholar Michael Fishbach speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Hello, everyone. This is VOA's International Edition. Very good to have you with us today. The HIV/AIDS epidemic is 3.5 decades old, and much has been accomplished in recent years to prevent deaths and to reduce new infections, and research continues on that ever-so-elusive HIV vaccine. Among those following the latest developments is Mitchell Warren. He is head of AIDS Advocacy Organization in New York. He speaks here with VOA's Joe DiCapua on what was accomplished in 2015.
I would say 2015 was one of the better years in memory in many respects. Not a perfect year, but a terrific year filled with progress and particularly filled with opportunity.
In what way?
The world began to align behind the evidence. If I had to think of one day this year, it was September 30th. When the World Health Organization issued its early preview of its new 2015 antiretroviral guidelines for treatment and prevention, anyone diagnosed with HIV should be offered treatment upon diagnosis, and that anyone at substantial risk of infection should be offered oral pre-exposure prophylaxis or PrEP. The guidelines issued on September 30th signaled that that is the way in which the world should go in acting on evidence and translating it into impact, if we can. But that was a real turning point, I think, for the year and for the 35 years of the epidemic.
About how many people are on antiretroviral drugs right now, do you know?
Well, I do know, and this is one of the challenges now for 2016 and beyond. Of the 37 million people who we estimate are infected with HIV right now, all of whom are eligible for treatment based on WHO new guidelines, only about 16 million are on antiretroviral therapy. So great news, 16 million people on therapy by 2015. If you said that to someone in the year 2000, they would have said you were dreaming. But there's a gap. Over 21 million people who still need treatment aren't getting it. So we are not even halfway there.
Is the funding available to get the rest on treatment?
The funding is not currently available, and I will say that when we just saw the U.S. Congress put through its spending bill for the year, and unfortunately, PEPFAR was flatlined. And that is a grave disappointment. This is a time of great scientific opportunity, of great public health opportunity, and the fact that the PEPFAR budget flatlines it is a disappointment because we need to do better. That said, we are seeing great efficiencies in the system. And I think one of the issues going forward is not just the need for more resources, and clearly we have a huge resource gap, but what we are seeing is people recognizing that different kinds of care can be provided, that not every person needing treatment or needing prevention needs the same treatment and prevention. So there is a need to really do better with what we have, even while we clearly need more resources.
That is Mitchell Warren. He is head of the AIDS Advocacy Organization, speaking with VOA's Joe DiCapua. For migrants and refugees crossing the Mediterranean trying to reach Europe, 2015 was the deadliest year on record. That according to the International Organization for Migration. A total of 3,771 people are estimated to have died while making that perilous voyage, compared to 3,270 in 2014. All of that according to the Geneva-based organization in a statement they issued on Thursday. Around the world, more than 5,350 migrants died in 2015, it is estimated. At least 800 died in Southeast Asia, mostly in the Bay of Bengal, the Andaman Sea, Malaysia, and Thailand. At least 330 deaths were reported on the Mexican side of the U.S.-Mexican border. But the bulk of the deaths, they tell us, occurred during attempts to cross the Mediterranean Sea bound for Europe from places like Africa and the Middle East and Afghanistan. Flooding, tornadoes, and wildfires in the United States and the UK, South America, and Australia, and the concentration of serious weather and natural events during the past month, leading many people to ask why. Michael Mann is director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He speaks with International Edition's Ira Melman about why we are seeing such extreme weather conditions all around the world and what can be done about it.
You know, it's a combination of several things. First of all, the vagaries of weather. You know, there's a randomness to weather, and sometimes you get events like this that happen just because of the chance occurrence of, you know, extreme weather. Now, add to that, not just an El Nino event, but the strongest El Nino event on record. This is a periodic warming of the tropical Pacific that influences weather patterns around the world. It comes every 4 to 5 years. Well, we are now seeing the largest El Nino event on record. And there's an interesting question to, you know, about what role climate change might be playing there. And what climate change does is it takes events that would have been, you know, extreme events and makes them not just extreme, but unprecedented. So instead of just seeing extreme rainfall events, extreme warm temperatures in parts of North America and parts of Europe, we're seeing record temperatures. We're seeing record flooding. And so climate change is the extra fuel that makes what would have been an extreme weather event an unprecedented weather event. Now, that El Nino effect, as we said, that's a natural phenomenon. But there is an interesting question that scientists are asking about whether climate change might actually be leading to bigger El Nino events. And climate change might be playing a role there. And climate change is taking these extreme events and making them more extreme because it's adding extra heat. It's adding extra moisture to the atmosphere. A warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. That means there's more energy in the atmosphere. And when there's more energy in the atmosphere, you get more extreme weather events.
What do you say to those who assert that this is nothing but cyclical? This has happened before?
It's wrong. Every part of that statement is wrong. And unfortunately, we do live in a sort of a modern environment where misinformation and disinformation is often spread, even though the overwhelming community of scientists across the world, it's the overwhelming consensus of the scientists across the world that climate change is real, it's caused by human activity, it's already having negative impacts on us. So no, you know, while it's true that climate does change naturally, we are seeing rates of change that are unprecedented. We're seeing levels of warmth right now, which are unprecedented potentially over many millennia. We have now reached levels of CO2 in the atmosphere. We've crossed 400 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere for the first time in millions of years.
Dr. Mann, I wish you a happy new year, but you haven't painted the brightest picture at all.
Well, thanks. A happy new year to you as well. And I do want to leave your audience with a little bit of optimism. The Paris Agreement signaled that maybe, just maybe, we can tackle this problem. And there is still time. Some bad stuff will happen. We're already committed to that. But we can make sure that the worst doesn't happen. We can still preserve this world for future generations, but we have to act now. And 2016 is going to be a critical year for making progress on this.
That is Michael Mann, director of the Earth Science Systems Center at the Penn State University, who was speaking with my colleague, Ira Melman. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
The fish skin leather industry has been growing over the years, and businesses such as Shadi, located in Russia's Ingushetia Republic, are taking advantage of growing demand. Fatina Kaguzgova, an assistant at the firm's shop, says a variety of fish types are used in production. She says we're using the skin of salmon, carp, sturgeon, trout, and guitar fish. Their brilliant colors, unique layered skin, make fish leather a big catch in the $50 to $90 billion worldwide leather industry. Entrepreneur Yekaterina Busarab traveled more than 700 kilometers to buy products from Shadi for her clients. She says, in the first couple of weeks, I used to come here as if it were a museum. Then it started progressing, and people started liking it. Busarab says 2016 brought greater demand for fish leather. At Shadi, a fish skin belt cost 26 euros, or a pair of shoes might cost more than 100 euros. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, by this hour, it is 2016 in much of the world, and VOA's Julie Tabo went out among revelers to hear what they had to say about the year just passed and the year ahead, and they offered some New Year's resolutions of sorts.
The world becomes a better place and my family becomes better too.
It just seems like everyone's so angry all the time, and we need to find peace again within ourselves.
Peace for all the world. My parents is back home in Afghanistan. I wish I can bring them here.
Having a healthy life.
Get better grades.
Travel more, work less. That's right.
Get healthy, so spend more time walking and spending more time with family.
Get better at karate.
Lose a little bit of weight, gain some more muscle, and, you know, become a better person.
Be healthy. Peace.
Be difficult to argue with any of those resolutions, would it? Peace, yes. Well, you know, New Year's, like many holidays, is full of merriment, music, of course, and there are a couple of up-and-coming internet sensations who put their spin on an old favorite that surrounds New Year's, dating back 70 years. Here's A.J. Raphael and Tori Kelly.
Hey.
So, like, what are you doing for New Year's and stuff?
Actually, I don't really know yet. What about you?
Oh, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing yet either. So.
Well, I just kind of wanted to ask. Maybe it's much too early in the game. But I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's? Out of a thousand invitations. comes a jackpot question in advance. What are you doing New Year?
Yeah, they're having fun, aren't they, huh? Well, you know, people all around the world are welcoming in 2016. Lots of fireworks parties. We've heard that already. Festivities everywhere. And as you might imagine, security has been tight with all the terrorist attacks and threats of such. The main fireworks display in Paris's Champs-Élysées Avenue was canceled on New Year's Eve, but a video was shown on the Arc de Triomphe. Britain welcomed in 2016 with giant fireworks shows there in London and in Edinburgh as hundreds of thousands of revelers hit the streets throughout the UK. Rio de Janeiro kicked off its Olympic year with a fiesta on the Copacabana beach. 2 million people were there. Can you imagine? Hours earlier in Sydney, one of the first places to ring in 2016, while Australians were treated to a spectacular fireworks display that lit up the famous city harbor there. And the world didn't let those terror threats get too much of their attention because they went out and had a big party, as they are in big cities all over the United States. Listen, thanks everyone for joining us today for International Edition here on The Voice of America. It's always good to have you with us. Hope you'll stay tuned. The latest world news is coming up shortly. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great 2016.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the terrible attacks carried out by Boko Haram in Nigeria, December 25th to 28th, as well as other recent attacks in Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In these attacks, Boko Haram killed dozens of innocent people who were targeted as they went about their daily lives, attending service at a mosque, shopping in a neighborhood market, or simply traveling down a road. We extend our deepest condolences to the families and loved ones of the victims. And we stand with the people of Nigeria and the region in the fight against Boko Haram. Boko Haram has no regard for human life. Its vicious attacks against the innocent, including women and children, and its use of children as human bombs prove its true nature as a purveyor of hate and terror. Although Boko Haram may be able to kill innocent people, it cannot succeed in imposing its will on the people of Nigeria and the other countries of the Lake Chad Basin. The people of this region are not cowed by Boko Haram. They continue to demonstrate remarkable resilience and unshaken resolve in living their lives as they work, take care of their families, and go about day-to-day living. The United States remains committed to helping Nigeria and its neighbors counter Boko Haram's senseless acts of terror. Despite much progress over the past year, due in large part to newly bolstered Nigerian and regional efforts, more work remains to ensure the people of Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria can live in peace. The conflict has affected the lives of communities across the Lake Chad Basin region, with some 2.5 million internally displaced people and more than 170,000 Nigerian refugees forced to flee their homes. The United States provides advisors, intelligence, training, logistical support, and equipment to our African partners as they work to defeat Boko Haram. We also support those affected by Boko Haram's violence through ongoing humanitarian aid and victim support services. The United States will continue working with our partners in the region to identify new opportunities to support their efforts to stop Boko Haram's wanton violence and restore order in the Lake Chad Basin region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
for, what's